morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, and it's always good to dial up the 712 when you're in the far corners of the Siouxland area, O'Brien, Sioux, Lyon, Osceola County. It is Derek Kaiser, head boys basketball coach at Hull Western Christian High School. It is proof, folks, that an Orab and a Wolfpack can get along here. So, Coach Kaiser, how are you doing this morning?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Well, we got a chance to meet about a month and a half ago up in Sheldon, and definitely wanted to have you on for your own solo. You made enough of an impression on me, Derek, that I wanted to have you on for a solo podcast. So let's get after it. Let's have a good day here. Before we get to Coach Kaiser, we of course want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosette Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced or spinal issues, have them go see Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi at 402-964-0300. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, of course, if you're listening, you're on iTunes, you're on Spotify, you're on some other platform, download, rate, review, subscribe, give us 5 stars, write nice things. That helps us move up in the rankings. And so if you would do that, that would be terrific. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Coach Kaiser, let's just jump right into it. You are the head coach of one of the most, if not the most, storied program in the state of Iowa on the boys' side of things. So tell us about your basketball journey and how you ended up in charge there at Hull Western Christian.
Yeah, I actually lived a block away from Western, where I actually coach now. My parents still live in the same place that I grew up. And honestly, our high school basketball team, our school is a town of about 2,500. We pull kids from a lot of different areas, but growing up as a kid, all you wanted to do is play basketball for Western Christian. That's, you know, you take your bike down the street and there's a park right across the school. And we don't anymore, but they used to have the trophy case right in the window. So you would just, as a kid, you just ride your bike past and you wanted to be somebody holding that next trophy. So that was kind of your motivation growing up. And that's all I kind of remember. We didn't have football back in the day at Western, so basketball was kind of the main deal. Basketball and volleyball were just two huge sports that you wanted to be good at. And yeah, so you just played a lot of basketball growing up. And I played for Coach Eekhoff, who was obviously an Iowa high school basketball coaching legend. And was fortunate enough to kind of get a passion playing basketball and just learning from him. And I always knew I wanted to be a coach from an early age. And I was able to kind of work my way into coaching. I played basketball at Dort and was able to get a coaching spot on staff there for a number of years. And, you know, throughout my journey, I coached at Dort. And then I was fortunate enough to get the head basketball position at Western about 8 years ago now. So It's been a really neat journey. It's not one that I probably would have expected, but it's been one I'm obviously cherishing a lot.
Yeah. Tell us about your Karen self, a pen and a napkin moment. Derek, when's the first time that you remember getting out a writing utensil of some sort and putting pen or pencil to paper or to napkin or whatever it may be, to when you started writing up those pesky X's and O's that kind of obsess us all?
Yeah. I actually remember back in the day, as a kid, Western would always put on one of the biggest basketball camps, in the area. It was just a big deal. And as a kid, you'd look forward to what coach you'd have. And during breaks of the camp, we'd have all these coaches that we always looked up to, right? Pulled from colleges and other high schools and grade schools. So you'd look forward to those coaches, and during break, those coaches would always be drawing up their favorite transition drill or something like that. I just remember seeing them doing that and then thinking, I want to be a part of that. So I would try to have conversations with those coaches, at a very early age, and then it just picked up. Right. And then you just kind of do that throughout little tidbits. I've always been a note taker. I've always just wanted to learn and steal from the best coaches. And now it's a little easier to do that via social media. But I just remember going to practices, coming back when I was a college student playing. I would always go back and watch Western practices just because I had so much respect for the staff there and thought they did well. And I would go scout for them. And it just, you know, that knowledge kept growing a little bit, and the desire to learn kept growing just because I saw the success that those other coaches put in. So it's just been evolving over time. But I remember that back when I was attending camp as a player.
Yeah, it's funny how it starts, you know. It's just there's just something that just kind of sucks you in, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's weird, and certain coaches have that personality. You know, we talked about it last time we were on the pod too, like just certain coaches thrive on it. Other coaches nowadays just want to coach, but it's all part of it. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. You obviously you've had a great run of success, and we're going to get to that here as you being in charge of the program, but the groundwork was laid long before that, and that can be a blessing and that can be a curse when you take over such a situation. You played for Coach Ekoff, Coach won, I can't remember if it was 8 or 9 championships.
Yeah, he won eight.
Yep. So what was that like? What were you thinking as you were considering applying for the job, filling out your resume? Were you nervous? Were you excited? Were you intimidated? Was a little bit of everything? And then you get the job, and man, you know, what was that feeling like?
Yeah, I think all the emotions go into it. And what you're not mentioning, Marty, is that in between Coach Ekoff was Coach Bill Harmson.
Yep.
He won 3 state championships with our girls and one with the boys at Western, and has now won 2 national championships at Dort. Mm-hmm. So just having Coach Ekoff and Coach Harmson, who they're the foundation of Western basketball, and they've produced so many great assistant coaches. You know, Lauren Dillon was on staff at one point. Kevin Vanishreek, who is a longtime coach at Calvin. There's just so many coaches that were so good on staff at Western that built the foundation. So I think that was the blessing, right? I was able to learn from so many of them. Bill Harmson was my JV coach when I was a player as a sophomore. And what I learned from them guys is that they each coach different, but are still the same. How they approached our standards was the same, in the fact that we knew as players, we knew the expectation of the program, but their approach to telling the standard and showing and sharing was much different. Mm-hmm. And so that was the scary part, in a sense that I knew the standard, right? As a kid, I knew that. I still coach that way. I know the standard is the standard at Western. I had to figure out how I wanted to tell that story. Mm-hmm. Through my staff and to my players and to our families. And to be quite honest, that took me quite a while to, and I'm still learning how to do that well. Mm-hmm. I can't sit here and say with the utmost confidence, I thought I was going to get the job, or I wasn't scared. And I really believed, because I was. I mean, I was.
Sure.
I was very early on in my marriage and coaching profession where I wanted that job. And our family was kind of like, okay, what are we going to do? So I was nervous, but I was also confident in my ability, because I had great people around me and great coaches to learn from and that were going to help us set up for success. So it was a ton of different emotions all in one.
Yeah. Well, you also, I'm sure, and I kind of had the same journey, where you were an assistant at a small college and an NAIA mm-hmm. school.
Yeah.
And then you go to becoming a high school head coach. And it's, you know, the court size is the same. The hoop is 10 feet off the ground. But there's a learning curve that goes into that. I know what I went through, Derek. I'm kind of curious to ask you, you know, what were some of the adjustments that you had to make going from that situation of being a college assistant coach to a high school head coach?
Yeah, so it's a great question. Because in college, my role, I taught a class or two a week on very entry level, but then I was responsible for all scouting, you know, film. I would always joke, like I'd watch 8 to 10 hours of film a day. Mm-hmm. And I would know the other opponent's playbook. Sometimes I felt like I knew it better than them, right? Because I was watching so much film. And then you get to high school and you realize, hey, these players that we have are playing other sports, which is yep. awesome, which I love. They're in class 8 hours a day. They're not just focused on basketball and our sport that we're coaching. I also have to do my full-time job of teach and lead and that sort of stuff. So basketball now becomes secondary.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas that the previous 10 years, basketball was the priority.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a huge learning curve of what can you all fit in and what to do. A good story is I still have the same assistants that I started with. Sean Sticker, our top assistant at Western, and he's been at Western and played for Western. He's been there for 15 years now. But I came into our first game with a college-like scouting report. It was 3 pages long, stuff we did at Dort's. You know, it was just what I knew. And I handed it out, and he looked at me, and he's like, he didn't say anything, but I could tell there was like, he's questioning what
a little bit of doubting Thomas there.
For sure, for sure. And he's like, no, this is what you believe we need to do. Let's do it. You know, he hopped on the train and he's like, let's go. And after year one, he's like, do you think we need to reconsider? And he was absolutely right. But he was being a fantastic assistant, just going with the flow of what I thought was right. And it was the total wrong decision, utter fail on my end. But he was allowing us to, okay, maybe this is something new. Maybe we can learn from this. And then we reevaluate it. And it was just a big fail on my end. Made the players overthink. And it is just a lot of different change for mm-hmm. me going from high school or from college to the high school realm. But I will say this, it's been an outstanding change for me personally, but also for my family life. I love the high school realm right now.
Yeah. You are fortunate with that success over the last 40 years. I look back before 85, I believe, was the first state champion.
85, yep. Yeah.
So, you know, it's obviously there's a massive amount of success. There's an expectation. And with that, like you talked about with your own personal journey, you looked up, you wanted to be part of a group that put a trophy into that trophy case. And the biggest thing that a lot of coaches run into, especially when they're trying to build up a program, is getting that player buy-in to have it be a player-led program. With your place, a lot of that is already in place. Now you tweak it, you manage it. You adjust it a little bit based on personalities and talent and that type of thing. But how much easier has it been for you to have that player-led program as you step into it? And what do you feel like, you know, over the span of the last 40 years or so, what has led to that player-led program environment?
Yeah, I think we have such a great amount of support from parents that allows you to buy in as a coach, as a player. We have parents that push our kids, but not over the limit and don't go too far. An example, my fifth grade daughter was invited to an open gym last night for our volleyball program, you know, a little youth night. And there's 60 girls that just go on a Tuesday night to go play volleyball. We mm-hmm. do the same with basketball. It's not mandatory by any means. It's voluntary. But we have parents that say, let's make this worth it, right?
Yeah.
There's total buy-in and investment. And I think the kids see that. Little kids are able to go to state tournaments and see that success. And they use that as their motivation. Mm-hmm. And then I think that naturally develops leaders. There's always somebody in, it may not be every class, and most likely it's not every class, but every second or third class, you're going to get a natural leader out of that group. And if they see success at the state level that they're cheering on as little kids, they kind of pull others in that group and get kids to the park or get kids to the gym or in tournaments and stuff like that. And I think we're fortunate as a coaching staff that we have parents that do a great job of leading prior to high school to develop those leaders. And then we can just fine tune them when they get to the high school. Yeah. But they come into Western to our program with a passion to succeed and be the next best team as a part of our tradition. So I think that just naturally develops leaders organically.
Coaching today is, let's be honest, it's harder than it ever has been. And the demands on us, the things that coaches are asked to do, the lengths that we are supposed to go to be the best coach that we can be, it's becoming more and more difficult. A lot of coaches come into their coaching career and they feel really, really good about their X's and O's knowledge, the technical aspects of the game. And I was very much the same way. That's what I thought coaching was all about, but it's so much more than that. It's about being, especially at the high school level, and you can say the same thing at the college level or even the professional level. It's about being the CEO of your program. Folks, I think I've put together maybe the best thing I've ever done, and that is my third book coming out here this fall, 365 Days of Hoops. A one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO. And what I was able to do was to put together 365 separate concepts of what it takes to become a basketball CEO of your program. This is all divided into basically 10 different areas: book studies, coach studies, X's and O's. So you gotta know what the 2-3 zone defense is all about. Zone sets, defensive tenets, whatever that may be. Culture, building a great culture at your program. Your game day execution. What are you doing on a game day on a daily basis when you're going into competitions? Skill development. Personal development, finding time for you, taking a vacation, handling failure, creating your resume, practice, how to build a great practice, how to become a great practice coach, off-season workout ideas, and miscellaneous coaching topics. 365 Days of Hoops has those 10 topics subdivided into 365 different things that you need to do as a basketball coach. At the end of every page, there is space to journal, to write, to X's and O's, everything that you need to do to take that topic, to think about it, and to think about what you are going to do. This is going to be available early this fall. Don't have an exact date yet, but I wanted to put that out there for you coaches so that you know what's coming out here. It's going to be a really, really good thing for you. One thought a day, take 3 to 5 minutes every day to think about it. And by the time you're done with this book, you are going to be really, really be prepared to be a basketball CEO of your program. So keep your eye out on it for 365 Days Hoops, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, coming this fall from a pen and a napkin. You're coming off a heck of a run here, Coach. Three straight state championship games, two back-to-back championships. I mean, just the dream scenario when you're talking about the events on the floor. Having just a lot of talented players, you got to have cohesion, you got to have humility, you got to have role acceptance, all of that stuff. Tell us a little bit about it, just going through the journey. The first, you lose the state championship, then you come back and you win a state championship really, really convincingly. And then, this past year, you play in the title game, a neighbor. And it's a tough, hard-fought, just a slobber knocker, it looked like. So what's this last 3 years been like? Again, one of the best programs in the state. You're going to have a lot of attention on you anyway, but then you've gone on this really extended run.
Yeah, it's been quite the run. It's been a lot of fun. I think you said it, Marty, of we had cohesion, we had ability, we had drive. And when you have that, we always say, at least at Western, we feel like if you have that, he's had a chance, right? We had arguably the last 2 years for sure. We've had a lot of talent, but we've had a lot of buy-in from the kids, and we've had two great All-State players that graduated now that have been the lead for the drive. They pull others to get in the gym, but we've also had a ton of other guys that played huge roles that put in the work that was probably more quiet. They didn't get the attention, and they just love being a part of a fun team. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people forget is, you know, we talk about the championship game we lost, and nobody expected that out of us that year. The prior year, we graduated 8 seniors before that, and we got upset in the district final to a team that we beat pretty handily twice in the regular season. And we graduated that, and there were really no expectations for that 2023 team. We as a coaching staff and players thought we could get there. But to play in a state championship game, I don't know if anybody really thought that. And we proved we were playing our best ball by the end of the year. But then that, just getting to that championship game and losing, allowed us to be successful the next 2 years because it just fueled the guys. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, when they think of state championship, you just think the season is kind of a perfect story, and it wasn't.
Sure.
The year we in 24, when we made a huge run throughout the state tournament and beat everybody by 20 or 25, whatever it was, we got beat by 25 in our last game of the regular season. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got pounded by a Sioux Falls Christian team, and we had a heart to heart with the seniors and, hey, what do you want to make of it? And how do you think this works? And we kind of figured stuff out in that week of postseason prep. So that was a different story for that team. And then this year we were the target on everybody, right? I mean, everybody wanted to beat us. We played by far the hardest schedule in Iowa in our class, and traveled a lot. And, the guys that we had on our team, especially the seniors, just took punch after punch from other team. They just took blows, and they were just so resilient. Mm-hmm. So it just teaches, those runs teach you more about, you know, who the guys are, what their character is. I think you remember that at the end of the day more than the final score or how games went. Obviously you can remember the championship wins. But I remember how they act in the locker rooms before, after, during the games, that sort of stuff, and who they are as people, probably more than I do how the game went. And it just, we've had a ton of resiliency, not just in this last stretch, but if you look at the course of Western traditionally, it's been resilient blue collar workers that were homegrown, tough kids from supportive families that just have high expectations for their kids. And it's a blessing to be able to coach kids like that.
Yeah. What did you learn about coaching in general? What'd you learn about yourself going through this 3-year run?
Yeah, every team is different. You as a coach have to adapt. You cannot do the same thing every year because every personality, even if you remove one kid from the team, whether he's a leader or not, your group looks different. Mm-hmm. Because they all have different personalities. They all gravitate towards somebody else on the team. So just as it can be a tweak of an ankle twist, and your team looks different in that stretch. So your personalities have to mesh. You have to do your best as a coach to find guys that gel and believe in each other. And then I think just getting that sense of belief in your kids, your coaching staff, and you guys, once you're all on the same page, unbelievable things can happen. No matter how talented you are, if they believe in you, and believe in each other, that is just so powerful in any sport, I believe. That doesn't mean you're going to win a championship, by no means.
Yeah. But you're going to max out with what you got.
You are, and you got to be so resilient. And the second you overlook somebody, or the second you think you're really good, that's when you get beat.
Yeah.
So it's just, state championships are awesome. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've been fortunate to be a part of a couple. But just a fraction off or a good shooting night by another opponent, there could be a lot of other teams that could be state champions on any given year. But something slightly goes wrong and it's just winning. The margin of winning is just so fractional. It's really tough.
Mm-hmm. Now what? We talked a little bit about it in Sheldon. You lose a lot of talent. You lose a really loaded senior class. You had a guy, Kalen Van Regenmorter. Now, only a guy who grew up in the area can rattle that off that smoothly. So, what's this summer been like as you've kind of had to put a new puzzle together? As you said, you know, every team's different. This puzzle's going to be a lot different than the one you've had the last couple of years.
If I'm being real honest and humble, it's like being a first-time parent. Mm-hmm. You know, like you have expectations of how you're going to handle this, and then you go into the first couple open gyms, and oh, this doesn't work, or this. So you're just learning on the fly. You know, you're learning and putting trust in new guys. But we've had it a couple times this summer already where we have to say the standard is the standard, right? Kaden and Ringwater is gone. Who's going to be the next to help fill his shoes? And, you know, we graduated 8 playing seniors and two senior managers. So a group of 10, we gotta fill 10 guys in 10 spots, right? So we just gotta find new ways. I gotta find ways to teach better. I probably have taken for granted having a great point guard that has been in our system for a long time, and I just sometimes assumed that he knew what he was doing, and he did. So I got to find better ways to teach that to the next upcoming point guard and that sort of stuff. So as coaches, we got to be more transparent. We got to be probably a little more lenient in our approach a little bit, where it's going to take time. We're just not going to be a polished team right now. But there's opportunity too. So there's a lot of neat things about graduating a class and starting fresh, but there's a lot of growing pain too, and that's kind of the stage we're at right now. And it's been a really good summer for us. That doesn't mean we've played perfectly or played awesome, but there has been a lot of growth. And we have a group this year that they want to prove to themselves and to a lot of other people, because the expectations from the outside probably aren't as high as what they have been in the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. But people still want to beat Western Christian. We understand that. So our standard will remain the same.
Yep. You've in the last year or two, you've begun this 6-5-6 basketball, kind of a, you know what? I'm not even going to try and explain it. I'm going to let you explain it, Derek. It's something that you're doing on the side here to help out the overall basketball community of the region here. So tell us about 6-5-6 basketball.
Yeah. So I've always wanted to do, you know, I've always done basketball lessons. I've always, put on some basketball camps, and I wanted to think of a way where we can impact basketball bigger than just at Western. I wanted to find a way that shows it's okay to work out against your neighboring school or your rival to make each other better. So my wife and I kind of came up with this 6-5-6 basketball academy. This, it really kind of evolved over the winter, released it this spring. It's based off of Galatians 6:5-6, and that verse just kind of talks about having accountability and taking responsibility of your own life. And if you've been given the gifts, take advantage of the gifts that the good Lord has given to us. And it talks about sharing all the good things that you have. So that's where it's kind of come. It just originated from. It's just been an idea in the back of my mind. And honestly, I wasn't really that ready to release it. But my wife said, if you don't do it now, it's probably never going to happen, because I'm not getting any younger. So we just kind of took a leap of faith and put it out there, and it's been well received. You know, we've had a number of kids from different schools working out against each other, and we're actually finishing up some workouts this week for the summer. And I hope it's a thing that can grow and just, you know, get more people involved. I don't want it to just be just a select few Western kids and that. I want it to give opportunity to kids in Northwest Iowa, because I think there's a big platform for us, that we have pretty good basketball and pretty good sports in our little corner. And I think we can showcase that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp, it's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. Coach, let's talk a little John Wooden. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
All right. So we are going to jump into our John Wooden quote of the day from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. I'll rattle this off here, Derek, and then give you a second to mull it over and interpret it and kind of give me what your thoughts on what Coach Wooden has to say here. So, Coach Kaiser, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Let's do it.
All right. From page 75 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, the John Wooden quote of the day is, "No matter how great your product, if your sales department doesn't produce, you won't get the results you want. Different departments must all function well for the company to succeed. Different individuals must also function well for the departments to succeed. It takes all doing their best."
Amen, right? Amen.
Yeah.
I think that just show, I mean, that couldn't define high school sports any better. I mean, it takes for us as a high school coach, our high school players, if our teachers aren't on board with athletics, if us athletic coaches aren't on board with academics, it's not going to be as good as it can be. You know, you always want to work for a great administration that allows you to just excel in your area, your gifted area. And I think, you know, if we can all do that, our sports are so good. Like for me personally at Western, I want our football team to be really good this fall, because that a lot of time allows for basketball to be successful.
Yeah.
Because kids feed off of that
success.
That success.
Yeah.
And 100%. And so I want to support our football coaches. I want all of our basketball players doing something in the fall, whether that's being a part of the football team, cross country team, the fall musical, whatever it is at Western. I want to support them well, because in return, I want them to support us well in the winter. So I think John Wooden is spot on. If any school can be good in one area, right? I mean, they can find something they're good at.
Yep.
But why wouldn't you want to be a part of a team that you can be good in all areas?
So, well, no. I just smile a bit because I wholeheartedly agree with you. So when you are in that situation where, you know, our school is really struggling, blah, 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 but we have this shining star. It's our drama department, or it's our volleyball team. And you're dealing with that coach or that sponsor or whatever it may be, who doesn't want to let go of that perhaps monopoly that they have over the success because of their own insecurities. You know, that's just kind of what popped into my mind. You know, how do you deal with that stuff? That for me was frustrating to deal with at times the selfishness of other coaches and working with other coaches, you know. And I and people who I work with, maybe they're going to whistle a different tune. I can say in my own heart that I feel good about my efforts to try and make everything work with other programs. I really can. I can look in the mirror and say I feel good about it. But that's not always universally the case, you know. So how do you make that work?
Yeah, in the hopes of high school athletics, you know, you hope you have an athletic department or athletic director that wants to see that success in all sports. Mm-hmm. But you're always going to have one sport that is great every year. For example, like, yeah, I'm able to coach at Western where we have coaches that want to see others succeed. But I think you got to find a spot where coaches are willing to think outside the box. For example, you know, when COVID hit, everybody thought that was the end all be all because we all did our workouts. I included, and I'm probably guilty of this than most, but we had workouts all the time. And then COVID hit, we couldn't work out in the summer. And it happened to be the best thing for our team and our best player, because he was able to get into the gym on his own rather than the structured time, and it brought intentionality out. So I think a lot of us older coaches, we get set in our ways, and if we can be a part of a greater team, by not sports specific, but administration wise, with the understanding that we need to be flexible and we can always change how we think. Our volleyball program is the best in the state of Iowa. They've had 20 some state championships, and our head coach is always changing her approach. Mm-hmm. And I've appreciated that about her, that she would have more say than anybody else, where this is how we do it and we're not going to get off that track. But we can always find ways and maybe do less. And quite frankly, Marty, this morning I had a conversation with one of our advancement directors of what is too much and what is not enough, and how do we find that balance?
What's that fine line? Yes.
You know, Scotty Scheffler said it perfect last weekend of that's not his end all be all, but when he's in it, he wants to be really good at it.
Yeah.
And that's a challenge for all of us, especially leaders in whatever department we are, of how do we meet and probably exceed expectations, but not make it our lifestyle.
That's
a big challenge.
Yeah, it is. You know, you want to, the phrase I would use was, we've got to let teenagers be teenagers. This is not a job.
Yes.
You know, and you know, they've got more going on than we ever had going on, in my opinion. That's just Marty Plum right there. You know, and I was pretty busy. I mean, I played two or three sports. I had a part-time job, school. Well, I don't know how much I worked at school, but, I still wanted time to be a teen. I still wanted to, and you're probably too young to remember cruising the loop in Sheldon, Iowa, and having that social life and hanging out with your friends. You've got to have that. And it just can't be all encompassing. So And at times, I think a mistake that we make as coaches is because it's all encompassing for us at times.
Yeah,
we've got to stay in that mind of that 14 to 18 year old where, yeah, it's important to them. And if you get somebody who it's really, really important to, that's a great blessing to have. And hopefully you have, when you have quite a few kids like that and they're gifted, you're going to be really, really good. But you've got to be willing to adapt to that too, don't you think, Derek?
100%. I think my oldest daughter is 10 years old and my wife and I are struggling with that right now. Like, because the memories I have as a kid, yeah, you go to the park and play, but I remember the pool, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember, half the other stuff I did, but I do remember that stuff. And that stuff is a pivotal part of your life journey. And I think you said it spot on where us coaches, that's a lot, and it's a crutch, but that's a lot of what we think of, right? That's all we think of is how can I win games in November and be really good by March and so forth. It's just always on our mind. That's just how we were made. And we probably, if we're being honest, each coach around us maybe has 1 to 5 players, depending on the given year, that think that way.
Correct.
The rest just want to be a part of a team. They want to be good during that season. They want to put some work in. And so they can prove that they're good enough to be a part of the team and help out that team.
Mm-hmm.
And we as coaches need to do a better job. And like I said, I need to do a better job than everyone else of this, of like, we need to remember that and say, okay, maybe this workout coming up on Thursday isn't as important as us coaches really think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's a fine balance because if we miss that, us coaches think, well, if we're not doing it, somebody else is, and they're getting better than us.
Yeah. Or
that's just how we think.
Or we want to also feel good because no matter what you say, winning is fun. And if you want to win, winning's better than losing. That's just fact. That's just human nature. And if you want to be successful in December, January, February, there's got to be a certain sacrifice in May, June, July. And, but you don't want it to become so much that it becomes too much. And that's the paradox in the journey.
Yep. When you win, you can look back and have self-satisfaction of, we did put in the work, so we earned that. But it also doesn't guarantee success. So it's also like, give, take a little bit. But you're spot on where you need to put in the work. We always say you got to put in the work to have a chance at success. And then the right things got to fall in place. But if you don't put in the work, your chances now go down extremely fast.
Yeah.
So as coaches, we want to set ourselves, our players up for success because at the end of the day, we all want to win, right? I know there's coaches out there saying, we want to do this and this. But one of your goals as a coach is winning.
Yeah.
You want to transform kids and you want to build relationships. And that's the most important part. But every coach coaches to win.
Yeah.
I mean, we never apologize for that. And as an AD, I don't want our coaches in other sports to apologize for winning. If you put in the work, we expect you to win. We expect you to do it the right way and have great character and teach and train and transform and all that. But we also want you to win while doing that because you can do both and you can do both very well.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little offense here, Derek. Let's dive into the Wolfpack playbook here. What do you guys like to do? How do you run your stuff? How do you break it down? I'm just, at this point, I just kind of like to turn it over to the guest, let them cook a little bit. And if I, if/when I've got questions, I will try to interrupt as politely as I can. So tell us a little bit about your offensive philosophy and what you like to do.
Yeah, we like to get out and run. I think, at the beginning of each season, or actually beginning of the summer, spring, prior to that season, you got to look at who you think your better players are going to be. And you have to, You got to try to structure what you want to do around those players, with the flexibility, knowing that injuries could happen and different guys that you didn't see playing could play in 6 months down the road after a good summer or whatnot. So you have to do all that planning. But at the end of the day, we always want to play fast. You know, we feel like we have the personnel. The last couple of years, we've probably been smaller than what Western traditionally has been. We do have good size coming up, so maybe that changes. But when we started going small and playing small ball, and that's kind of the fad in basketball right now, you really had to, we felt we had to allow more flexibility and not run as much continuity stuff. And we went more of a principle-based, where we have a certain structure in how we do transition, and then we set up, and then freedom comes from that structure that we initially set up. So there's certain spots on the floor that we want to pass it to, and certain spots where we're not allowing our guys to pass it in transition. And then from there comes the freedom. And I think you can do a lot more freedom when you have a very high Q point guard. And fortunately for us, we've had that the last 3 years. And I think in the future, we'll have a point guard that has a very high IQ that we can continue playing that way. But it just allows, we play a motion offense where there's some Princeton continuity stuff, hybrid stuff mixed in, but we want to play fast, and we want to do a ton of cutting, and we have our best shooter shoot. And I think what we have done well the last couple of years, our shot selection has been outstanding. But we've also had really good shooters in the program, so I think your shot selection can be very good if you hold that and hold some of those players accountable within your system. Meaning there's different rules. I don't necessarily do the red light, green light that some coaches have done. I have been on a team where I've had the red light as a shooter, and it doesn't make you feel good, but I've also been on a team where I've had the green light. And maybe shouldn't have had the green light. So I think you learn that. So we don't really have that system, but we do have, like, our best shooter last year had the freedom to shoot a quick one in transition with his feet not quote unquote set, because he was capable of doing that. But other shooters in our transition system, we were not going to allow that shot. So there were certain players that have, they're not really, we don't call them rules, but players just know what we're going to allow versus what we feel like we can get a better shot.
Their role is explained to them differently than someone else.
100%. And Marty, that rule is defined throughout their practice and how much time they put in the gym. If I see a guy putting in 20,000 shots over the summer, he's going to have a lot more freedom than a guy that just comes in the fall and starts shooting on the dish in preparation for the season in a month. Because that trust has evolved over the course of time. And I know that's going to pay off later for us. But I forget one of the old school coaches says, why would I give confidence in a bad shooter? And I believe that. But I also need these kids put in a ton of work. So we got to allow some freedom, especially early on in the year, to see if those players who have the full freedom, can they make shots in those early on games? And if they can, then that just keeps growing.
I think there's that to it, Derek. And, you know, you got to allow, I believe, again, this is just Marty Plum. I believe you give a kid a chance to either win or lose a job, win or lose a role. And when you're talking about the shooting part of it, for me, when you tell a kid don't shoot or you can't shoot or whatever, that's like telling a baseball player, well, you can't hit. Well, how are you going to get them excited about anything else in the game? So maybe you give up a couple of shots from Billy, But by giving Billy those two shots, he's going to be just a bulldog on defense for 24 minutes a game for you. And there's got to be some common sense give and take. You can't think this far ahead of your face. You got to think the long run. I think we're on the same page there.
For sure. And we believe a lot on the inside out pass or the swing transition pass and things we want out of transition. So those mediocre shooters or shooters that don't get the amount of game shots that others might, those are the type of shots that we really preach to those type of players that, hey, here's your chance. You're going to get your chance. And when you do, take advantage of it. Right. But we're not just going to jack up a 3-5 seconds into the break because we want to play fast and just so Johnny can get a certain number of shots. I don't believe on a player should get a certain number of shots. I probably had one of the best point guards in small class Iowa the last 2 years. I did in Kademan Regmorter, and not one time over the course of his 4 years that he played varsity basketball did he ever ask for more shots, or did I ever say you need to take more shots. Mm-hmm. It was just ingrained in practice. Hey, here are the shots that we trust you to take. Now, did he take some bad shots in his career? Yes, he did. Yep. But that allowed him to have creativity and freedom of his mind that he could play free on a bad shooting night, but also play with the same freedom on a good shooting night and make unbelievable tough shots for us over the course of his 4 years. Mm-hmm. So we teach a lot about shot selection in practice. And I think we do a pretty good job of putting them in situations in practice where when games come, they're ready to shoot. That doesn't guarantee they're going to make them, but they're ready for shots in certain spots where we feel like we can get them a shot. Mm-hmm.
Folks, we had a great day on April the 12th at the 5th Annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. And if you couldn't be there, that stinks. But what's fortunate for you is we taped everything that we did. So if you are interested in ordering any of our clinic videos or all of our clinic videos from our great presenters on April the 12th, it's there for you. All you have to do is DM me on Twitter at @apenandanapkin, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. We've got Andy King talking about 5-on-5 transition and controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer from Iowa State University on player development. We've got Lucas Dollinghouse on coaching through an administrator's eyes. Wade Coulter talking about pressure defense and extending your pressure defense. Raz Vanderloo with a basketball smorgasbord of stuff from Sioux City East High School. USA Basketball, and Jamie Smith from Solon High School talking about shooting and shooting technique, shooting fundamentals. It's a great lineup, great coaches, great presentations. They're there for you. $10 a piece is all the videos cost. If you want to get all six of them, I'll bundle it together for you. $50 for all six videos. So coaches, if you weren't there, too bad, but because we're thinking ahead here, we've got the videos available for you. Give me a shout out. Let me know if you want to order any or all of the 5th Annual A Pen and a Napkin Spring Clinic Coaches Presentations. Coach, you've mentioned on more than one occasion here in the podcast today about your assistant coaches, and there's no great head coach without really good assistant coaches. What are some of the things that you ask your coaches to do? What are some of their responsibilities? How do you decide who does what? Just talk to us about your staff structure and how you delegate a lot of the responsibilities throughout your entire staff.
Yeah, great question. Our staff has evolved, and the descriptions that we give to these guys keep evolving. So for instance, when I started at Western, it was kind of a structure of head coach, varsity level, head coach of the JV team, head coach of the freshman, and then the freshman and JV coaches kind of just help out the varsity coach whenever. And that model was good. I think a lot of schools can do that and do that based on budget. But really when we started having a lot more success, we went to a model where my longtime JV coach and the Sean Stichter, who's our head assistant coach right now. He's the one that's been at Western longer than any of us have. We made him to our full-time assistant varsity coach. So he is strictly working with our varsity coach as an assistant to me. And really it's more of a co-head coach model. If I'm being 100% transparent with you, cause I tell our team that he is the most knowledgeable guy on staff, stats wise, Western tradition, history wise. He is just, so smart. He teaches chemistry. I mean, he's way smarter than all of us. So it's kind of the running joke of our program. But I think what makes him stand out, and I'll talk about my other assistants too, but what makes Sean Stichter stand out is he is 100% loyal to the guys in the room. He's 100% loyal to our team. He's 100% loyal to my ideas, and he's willing to say, no, I don't think that's a great idea, but I'll run with it. If you think it's good, I'll run with it. And I think that's the number one thing you need to have. If you're going to have assistants, you have to have that loyalty, and you got to have 100% belief in each other, and you can bounce feedback off each other. You can be constructive in your criticism a little bit, but once the ball tips and once you're not brainstorming ideas outside of practice, once you're in practice and you're in games, you have to be on board with all of each other, because if you're not, things can go south right away. Mm-hmm. So we have him. He works with our varsity full time, and he is in charge of our defense. We kind of went the football route. He also coaches football. He's great at analytics. So we made him kind of our defensive coordinator. I let him go full steam of what we're going to run on defense every year. And I like to say on this, I think we have a pressure man to man group, or I think we have a zone group. I need you to figure out how we're going to lay this plan out in practice and progress through the season. He does all of that. So we plan practices every day together. He plans out the defense, and if I don't like an idea, I'll tell him and he'll kind of tweak it. But I kind of let him run full steam with it, because I trust him. And B, I feel like he feels like he's in his wheelhouse, and it's kind of fun to see coaches take on some responsibility and just run with it. So we kind of run. I mean, we're obviously one program, but he takes the defense. I take the offense. We share ideas off one another. And it's really worked out well. And I think when I let go of some things out after my first couple of years, we got a whole lot better. Just letting another guy who's a lot more smarter than I am take charge of what he is really good at. Our program got a lot better. So that's been a good adjustment. And then we have a couple younger guys that are more in tune with what our teenagers are dealing with and what they're facing and hanging out and all that sort of stuff. So we have,
so you're saying you've reached the seasoned and experienced.
I have.
Okay.
It's kind of sad, actually.
You're not yelling at clouds or anything, are you?
No.
Okay. All right.
So it's kind of funny how that, you know, evolves, like you said. And we have Garrett Franken, who was a great basketball player at Dort, and he was a Atlantic High School All-Star. So he's been on our staff now. He married a girl that went to Western, so he lives in town, and he's been on our staff now for 3 years. He coaches the JV, and then we have a former player at Western that now plays football at Northwestern, and he's helping us coach too. So it's we got young and old mixed together, and we just all get along, and we all have one mission in mind, and it just works. So that our format really thrives well together. We kind of mix up duties per varsity. Coach Franken, our JV guy, he's more of our player development guy. And our freshman coach, we call him Coach Jim. He's more of our hype guy. He he keeps it loose with the guys. He knows the balance of when we need to focus in and when we need to keep them loose. And then us older guys on the varsity, we just, you know, kind of do our thing, what works, what we feel works, and keep them disciplined and structured and all that. So it's, you need loyalty. You need, you know, I'm great friends with all my assistant coaches, which is, I would say, kind of uncommon. And it's a really neat thing. I enjoy going to work with them every day, and I think they can say the same. And it's just been a really good balance for all of us.
Mm-hmm. When you use your staff, when you are breaking down things, one of the things is for any coach, and the higher level you go, it's easier because you have more resources, but at the high school level, it's limited to a degree. Now you get on Huddle, and Huddle does it's remarkable compared to where we were even 5 years ago, let alone when I started, when, you know, let's just say, you know, hieroglyphics and cuneiform were in style. So, you know, statistical analysis and the things that you guys look at as a coaching staff, let's kind of bring this all full circle here, Derek. You know, what are some important things that traditionally, again, every team is different. Your strength 1 year may be a weakness the next year based on the DNA and the hand that you're dealt. But what are you guys looking at typically when it comes to your statistical analysis and how you are trying to have the best team that you possibly can?
Yeah, I look at two things right when I look at the stat sheet, and I don't know if this is common or not. I'm looking at what's our rebound difference. I'm looking at our offensive rebounds, and then I'm obviously looking at, you know, I think a lot of coaches look at turnovers, right? But when I get stats right away, right after the game, I look at rebounds and only rebounds. I think if we can rebound well, whether we're shooting it well or not, if we're rebounding it well, I feel like we're going to be in most games. Mm-hmm. Now, there's going to be a case that, you know, we turn it over 15 times and, you know, we like to have that number around 11, depending on how fast we play and whatnot. That if you're turning it over, it doesn't really matter how well you shoot it. But I don't need to look at a stats sheet to see if we're turning it over too much, right?
that sticks out like a sore thumb.
That and you can. My wife always jokes, you can kind of see that as on your body language, right? So I know if we're turning it over way too much. But then if you go further in depth, and like you said, Marty, if you have huddle analytics and all that sort of stuff, then I look at points per possession. Mm-hmm. And if we're rebounding at the rate that I would like, and after the end of each game, we like to be 80% of our defensive rebounds we need to get, and we need to grab 40% of the offensive rebounds. And I use those numbers, and they're probably way too high. And it's not very realistic, but we used to always use those numbers when I was an assistant at Dort. And the head coach I worked for, Ross Delma, under him at Dort, he always said, if we can get 80 and 40, we will not lose a game. Mm-hmm. And he was 99% accurate. I think we had one rare game that we were at 80 and 40 and above those numbers, and we still lost. But if you can get to those numbers in a high school game, you won't lose. I just really believe that, because even if you're not shooting it well, you're getting those offensive boards, you're getting putbacks or second chance opportunities a lot. So I really don't look at, you know, the old one is you got to shoot more free throws than the opponent makes, that sort of stuff. That's all part of our game, end of game goals. Uh-huh.
Do you have some game by game goals that stay consistent?
Yeah, we do. I have a sheet of 12 things that, you know, and it's free throws. It's 80% of defense rebounds, 40% of offensive. We want to be under 11 turnovers per game. We want to hold, their best player under 15 points. We want them to shoot under 40% defensive efficiency rating, that sort of stuff. But it's really weird in the high school game. Like we can play with some of our best games, and our goal is to meet 8 of those objectives every game. Mm-hmm. We had games this year where we really met two of those goals, and we played a really good game. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I got to do a better job of being more realistic with our numbers, or I don't know. And I used to share those with the players all the time. Now it's just, I share them with my coaching staff. Mm-hmm. It's more game by game. And that's how we plan practice, based on what we did or did not meet. But it gives us a base of, okay, we're doing really well on the defensive end, but we're not finishing possessions because we're not rebounding.
Yeah.
Or offensively, we're scoring a lot per possession, but we could do way more if we weren't turning it over. You know, so I look at it like that. Yeah. But my assistant coach is our stat guy. He knows all the stats of the opponents, and he's just an analytics guy. And he'll, you know, every week or so, he'll just bring some crazy stat that opponents are doing better than us, and something that we would have never thought of. He'll bring, and it brings a ton of value to our team. That's for sure.
Yeah. So you say you don't share that with your guys as much as you used to.
So when I started, I used to, and Western always did this. When I played for Coach Ekoff, we would run to the office the next day and get our a former math teacher at Western created this performance points formula for all Western players. So you would get like a +2 for a hustle play and +6 for a drawn charge and -1 for a missed shot, all that stuff, right? It's just a crazy formula. And as a player, we would run to coach's office the next morning to see what our performance points were. I mean, that's how we decided if we played well. And we would, quite frankly, look at players below us. And one of my best friends, I would make sure I was trying to be above him in those performance points. So I still do that. And when I started at Western, I would post the performance points and I would post the game objectives. Did we meet our goals? And about 3 years ago, we went to a focus and we said, we are worrying about ourselves and ourselves only. We're not talking about stats. We're not talking about opponents. I went for a full year not watching opponents' film. My assistants did all the opponents' breakdown. I only watched us, and I told our guys and myself, we are worrying about our team and our team only. Mm-hmm. And that was a really hard time, just because I was used to having more control and knowing the opponent. I felt like I had a little more control, but that year we didn't watch opponent's film. You know, my assistants did, and they obviously knew the scout and they told me the scout and that sort of stuff. But I didn't watch an entire year's worth of film on the opponent until I have to admit, I watched a sneaky clip of Boyden Hall before we played them in the championship game in 2021, sitting in the hotel. Because I was like, we're finally here. Like, we're not going to, you know. But it's just weird how some of that stuff works. And I think the sooner you can step out of the box, and learning that from older coaches, the sooner that you can just break away from what we've kind of all been told works and make something that's your own, I think there's a lot of value in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you wanted to see Boyden Hall, all you had to do was drive across town.
Yeah, I know. And you hear, you know, I knew enough of them, obviously, from growing up and how they've always played. And that was just a once in a lifetime deal. I mean, that was really cool. It's coming up on 5 years now, so it's a pretty cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Derek, great stuff today. A lot of fun chatting with you. If folks want to know more about you, want to know more about your program, how do they find out?
Yeah, you know, I love meeting new people. I love when coaches can come watch our practice and they invite me to theirs. You can gladly share my phone number. It's 712-301-4549 if you want. I have school email that's available. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. There's nothing flashy. I got nothing to hide. It's kind of a boring old high school coach that loves loves learning new things. So if somebody out there wants to connect, I'd love to talk hoops.
Perfect. Great stuff today, Derek. It was this in the end is going to sound a lot smoother than what it was, but that's only, see, if I wouldn't have ever said anything, nobody would have ever known, Derek, but it was
you're a magic man.
I wouldn't go that far, but watch out, Quincy Jones, may he rest. Ozzy Osbourne passing away today. I don't know if you saw that or not. Did you see?
I did not. That's crazy.
Yeah. This is starting to hit home a little bit. I had a weird thing. I wasn't the biggest Van Halen fan, but when Eddie Van Halen passed away, that for some reason hit me hard. Like, I don't know. It was just weird. I was like, God, Eddie Van Halen, how can we lose Eddie Van Halen? And, more and more of these folks that I grew up watching on MTV in the 80s cruising the loop in downtown Sheldon in the late 80s and early 90s, they're no longer with us.
I tell my wife, I remember people cruising in Sheldon. She's a Sheldon. She grew up in Sheldon and she didn't cruise the loop all that much, which is crazy. So it's...
Yeah,
I know. It just tells you we're a lot older than a lot of people.
Yes, exactly. So, well, Derek, thanks so much for your time today, man. I appreciate it. If you can hold the line here a second while we wrap everything up. Appreciate that there. Again, Derek Kaiser, he has taken a great program and continued its excellence. And that's a lot harder said than done. And Coach Kaiser's done a great job with that with Western Christian there in Northwest Iowa. I want to thank him for his time. We, of course, want to thank our founding sponsor, COSAC Chiropractic. Want to follow us on Twitter, @ a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review. Again, subscribe. Give us a review. Give us 5 stars. Greatly appreciated. Question, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. It's been a great day here with Derek Kaiser. A lot of fun. Hope you folks have enjoyed it. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.